Descriptions and depictions of angels come from ancient and medieval times. Now there's a modern angel craze. How much do we really know about angels?
Have you ever seen an angel? Have you ever talked to one? Has one ever talked back to you? People believe that there are such things as angels. Matter of fact, there is a tremendous collection that people can buy. I found out about it. I didn't know that until I looked into the internet the other day, called Heavenly Angels. And apparently they're little bitty ceramic dolls. They're looking beatific, little bitty girls with wings or whatever, little babies, and they're real cute and in every kind of a pose you can imagine. You know, people name themselves after angels. For example, Michael, the archangel. My grandson is named Michael. What about Michael Jordan? There are so many that are named after an archangel. Gabriel, you've heard of Gabe and Gabby and Gabriel. It's a name of an archangel. It is mentioned in the Bible. Very few people are named Lucifer. That's because they know that Lucifer, one of the three archangels mentioned in the Bible, became Satan the devil. Although there were people that named themselves nearly close to that. But, for example, I had a friend who was in the Navy with me. Unfortunately, he was killed in an automobile accident. But his name was Angel Delgado, and that merely meant skinny angel, because Angel is the Spanish for angel, and Delgado means skinny. That was his last name, of course. There's angel's food cake, and there's devil's food cake. I've got a couple of sermon tapes I want to tell you about. It took me two full sermons of over an hour apiece, and even then I couldn't cover all of the ground, but I covered an awful lot of it, and I'll tell you what I covered in a moment, entitled All About Angels 1 and 2. All About Angels 1 and 2. And all you've got to do to get both sermons, an hour 10 in length, wading through all of the scriptures, Revelation, the book of Ezekiel, Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28, Genesis the third chapter, the first time any kind of an angelic creature other than human appeared to mankind. And you can have them free of charge if you will dial 903-561-7070. Let me give you a clue. You ought to start calling now. Or write down the number, because oftentimes the lines are busy, there aren't enough operators to go around, and you can call during the business week, anytime from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, and you can even call on the weekend or night transfer. We have an answering service. So anytime, 24 hours, you can call 903-561-7070, free of charge, no price whatsoever, All About Angels. Now, what about angels? Does every little child that is born have a special angel assigned to him or her? If that is true, why all the child kidnappings? Why the rotten, filthy, dirty, perverted, what words can I have for them that are safe to use on television that express my feelings for the piece of crud that crawls out from beneath a garbage can or emerges from a sewer somewhere, that would take a little girl and use her in like an object to feed his rotten, perverted, twisted lust? Now, I asked the question, you know, some of these people might even be named, like I said, little angel, this and that. If there's a great guardian angel there, why does he allow it? Why wouldn't the angel intervene? Why wouldn't he draw his great big sword and just hack off the hand or any other part of the anatomy that would be appropriate of somebody who is trying to kidnap and rape a little girl? Doesn't happen, does it? Now, a lot of people will say that they talk to God. They don't. They are liars. That isn't true. When people say, God told me the other day, they're lying right through their teeth. But, you know, in that profession, if you can call it that, where people claim to be religious people and religious leaders, preachers, teachers, whatever, prognosticators, prophets, holy Joes, holy men, sky pilots, they get away with it because no one in the audience or in the television audience or in their immediate environment, a little local church or something, says, you didn't either talk to God the other day, Pastor. He was busy talking to me. I had his full attention. He was in my house. So there's no way that you can prove it one way or the other. And people get away with this kind of charlatan activity because no one can prove them wrong. If you see someone walking down the street carrying on a conversation, and you say, hey, buddy, what is the matter? What's going on? He says, shut up. I'm talking to my angel. He's right here beside me. I would say, well, turn around and go the other way and go somewhere else. You might want to call someone to try to give the guy some help. But the point that I make in the two sermons I want you to get is what the Bible says about angelic spirit beings. Do such beings exist? Now, the answer is yes, and they exist in a heavenly hierarchy. They are called the host of heaven. There are only three archangels mentioned anywhere in the Bible: Michael, Gabriel, and Lucifer. Lucifer is described in both Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28 as one of the cherubim that covered. And if you look into the description of the Ark of the Covenant that was carried about in the tabernacle in the wilderness and later on reposed in a temple until it disappeared in one of the destructions of the temple many, many years later, it had two little gilded cherubim that appeared to be like, and a lot of times they want to make them look like men with wings. We'll see about that in just a moment. I'll go through a little bit of that in the first chapter of Ezekiel with you, and I wonder if that is true or not. Because even though people have tried to recreate some artist rendering of what the Ark of the Covenant looked like, with the angels with their wings overspreading the mercy seat, as it's called, they always tend to make them look like men with wings. And that is not exactly what is described in Ezekiel 1 and 10 as a cherub. Now, there are cherubim and seraphim. And seraphim are said to have six wings, and cherubim have four wings, four faces, have calves or oxen-like feet, a lion-like body with a tail. They have eagle's wings and sometimes the head of a man, a lion, an eagle, or an ox, depending on which way they face. Then there are 24 elders mentioned in the book of Revelation that are described as being seated, 12 on each side, on a huge, big, translucent sea of glass, just like the most gorgeous piece of rose quartz or something you ever saw, leading toward the brilliance of God's throne. And there is God the Father, you cannot see his face, only a brilliance, with rainbows and millions of angels and angelic choirs singing, "Holy, holy, holy, Lord God Almighty, righteous art thou, for you have judged thus," in a picture of God's wrath being poured out on the earth against a great false church and a great 10-nation combine that will fight Jesus Christ at his coming, which are going to receive the plagues of God and are going to be destroyed during the day of the Lord. That depiction is in the book of Revelation, of how they throw down their thrones in absolute subject obeisance before, or abject obeisance, I should say, before God the Father, and say, "Holy and righteous art thou." So in the host of heaven, you have God the Father, Jesus Christ the Son, the 12 elders who look to be elderly human beings, but they are spirit beings instead, cherubim, seraphim, and millions, perhaps billions, countless billions of angels. Now, angels are called messengers, and the Hebrew word is interchangeable between angel and messenger. It means messenger. And I will tell you in the sermons, if you will get them, about some of the most important prophecies in the Bible. Very lengthy. The lengthiest prophecy in the Bible is a direct quotation from an archangel, believe it or not. It is not something that is first-person quotation from Christ. It is an archangel who identifies himself and says he needed another archangel to come and help him withstand an evil spirit that was trying to deliberately overthrow God's plan and God's program for the successive revival and destruction of some of the great world-ruling empires of that time, Babylon to Persia to Greco-Macedonia to Rome. And those were the four successive world-ruling empires, and there were great archdemons that were actually, well, Satan himself was probably active in it as well, that were putting thoughts into the minds of people that were like vice-regents or kings or emperors or dictators. And here were God's righteous angels that were actually struggling in some kind of a spiritual combat with these other great, exalted, but perverted evil spirits, trying to thwart God's plan, and the righteous angels were insisting that God's plan would be worked out on time. And that's found in the 11th, the 10th, and the 11th chapters of the book of Daniel. It is fascinating reading. What about angels then? The Bible mentions angels 280 times. Who are they? What are they supposed to do? Is there a guardian angel for every individual? Does each child get an angel assigned to him or her? What does it mean when it says women ought to have a covering over their head as a sign that they're in subjection to their husbands because of the angels? What is that all about? What does that mean? In my travels, I frequently run across people wearing weird, so-called religious, end quote, costumes. Just yesterday, there was a lady sitting there. She was actually, apparently, a foreigner from some other country, wearing weird headgear, and sitting there with a badge on at the exit to a baggage collection point in an airport. And I couldn't help myself. I walked up and I said, what is that? What is that that you're wearing there? Apparently, she spoke very little English. This is the people that they've got there to help protect us from ourselves, make sure that no terrorists get aboard an airplane. Oh, it just, anyway, that's another subject. And she said, it is my covering. I thought, oh, for pity's sake. Then she is caught up in the complete misunderstanding of the 11th chapter of 1 Corinthians. It talks about a woman's hair is given her for her covering, and that a woman should not be shaven bald like the temple prostitutes back during that day, and a woman shouldn't have a man's haircut, shaving it up the back and shaving it off with the ears sticking out. You know, some women got ears big enough to look like a cab coming down the street with both doors wide open, and it's better if they just have long hair to cover them. But anyway, be that as it may, here was this woman with this weird headgear, and she said it was her covering. Well, some sects and cults completely twist and misunderstand the meaning of that plain script. It says a woman's hair is given her for her covering, quote, because of the angels. And you know what the inference is? The inference is any woman that is masculine and that wears a masculine hairdo and does not have feminine hair is not receiving God's protection and does not have a heavenly angel about her or about her children or about her home or family to protect her. You need to find out about that. Let me take a quick time out. You be sure to get these two tapes. You will find they are fascinating. And I'll be right back.
Stories and depictions of angels have fascinated people down through the ages. Everything from babies with wings to warrior angels battling evil. How much do you know about angels? Get your free cassette copies of All About Angels, Part 1 and Part 2 by Garner Ted Armstrong. They'll be sent free when you call 903-561-7070.
There's an incredible amount of myth and fallacy and superstition and nonsense about angels. For example, a lot of people think that angels cohabited with women before the flood. There are those that think Satan the devil actually raped or cohabited somehow with Eve and produced a race that they hate. And believe it or not, there are religious organizations and churches, sects, cults, whatever you want to call them here and there around in this world of ours, that believe that people they don't like that might be of a different color, a different race, different language, whatever, are actually the progeny of Satan the devil. Do spirit beings have DNA? I don't want to get clinical here, but since they are spirit beings, do they produce, you know what, and DNA? Are they allowed and can they actually have children? Well, Jesus Christ himself gives the answer, and you will get the answer when you get All About Angels 1 and 2, those two tapes. And the answer is logical, and it absolutely is biblical. Now, the first place in the Bible where human beings encounter an angel is found right in the third chapter of Genesis, verse 1 through 5. And a very unfortunate Hebrew word, well, it's a unfortunate English word from the Hebrew word, it was mistranslated by the translator back in 1611, used the word serpent. It said, now the serpent was more subtle than any other beast of the field which the eternal God had made. But the Hebrew word is nachash, N-A-C-H-A-S-H. And the serpent word is supplied by the translators because of the curse that is pronounced upon this creature, however he looked in aspect. And elsewhere in the Bible, there are a lot of clues about what a cherub or a seraphim might have looked like. And there's an awful lot of clues that you can find in mythology as well. Now, the word nachash merely meant a whispering enchanter. And it has absolutely no connotation whatsoever about aspect, about appearance, about physiognomy. So really it reads, now the nachash, the whispering enchanter, was more subtle than any other beast of the field which the eternal God had made. So he is a creature. He's made by the eternal God. And he said unto the woman, yea, God has said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden. Rotten lie. God had not said anything of the kind, and he knew it. But the woman, like an awful lot of ladies that will listen to a telemarketer, they used to knock on the door-to-door salesmen, now they ring your telephone off the wall, and maybe invite them in, have a cup of tea, and get into a conversation. A lot of people will do that with religious types who come around trying to hawk a lot of literature and biblical doctrinal ideas of theirs. And the woman was like that. She said to the serpent, "Oh, no, you don't understand. We can eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. We can eat all of them. But of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God had said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." Then comes the first great lie and the first plank in the platform of the very foundation of one of the greatest fundamental doctrines of churchianity today, the doctrine of the immortality of the soul. The devil, the Nakash, the whispering enchanter, who is a fallen archangel formerly called Lucifer, who appears to them probably in a standing serpentine form, maybe with wings, a huge head. Maybe it was so absolutely striking and shocking that the woman, she had nothing with which to compare. She had no past history. She wasn't afraid of the dark, or she wasn't afraid of evil creatures. She wasn't afraid of the myth of St. George and the dragon, or Jack and the beanstalk, or some kind of a dragon or a winged flying serpent somewhere. So if she saw something like that actually standing upright speaking to her, it wouldn't have been any more surprising to her if an elephant had said something, or a crocodile. She wouldn't have cared. She had no past history. So however he looked, magnetic, charming, subtle, maybe absolutely in an evil, wicked way, glorious, whatever his aspect was, he said, "God knows better than that." You know, in the Spanish Bible, which I have, "Más sabe Dios," God knows more. God knows better than that. God knows that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be open and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. You will aspire to this high level of tremendous intelligence, of perception, of the ability to decide between what is good and bad, what is right and wrong. And the implication is God is a liar. That's what the devil is saying. God knows more than that. God knows better than that. God shouldn't have told you that. God should have told you what I'm telling you. So here's the first great big lying, subtle inference from Satan the devil, that you ought to go ahead and disobey. You ought to go ahead and reach out and take whatever feels good. If it feels good, do it. Long it doesn't hurt somebody else, go ahead and do it. Even if it isn't yours and you want it, well, if you want it bad enough, take it. So it says a little later on, the curse comes in Genesis 3:14-15. The eternal God said unto the Nakash, "Because you have done this, you are cursed above all cattle and above every creature of the field. Upon your belly shall you go." Meaning, prior to that time, he did not. So prior to that time, he must have stood upright. Interesting, isn't it? "On your belly shall you go, and dust shall you eat all the days of your life." Now, it's usually kind of a perversion for people to try to use snakes in their religion. There is an inherent, inborn kind of a revulsion in the human heart, especially women, against snakes. My grandmother hated snakes. She found a snake one time in a rhubarb patch, and she had that thing chopped into about 7 pieces with a hoe. "I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. It shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel." A shadowy reference, so say the commentators, and I agree with them, that Satan the devil would attack, and of course would succeed through causing Judas Iscariot, through actual possession, to betray Christ, and that the woman is a picture of the church and of Jesus Christ the Savior. And here comes the devil who would bruise her heel, or the seed that was to become Christ. There's a shadowy reference there. It's hard to really read it yourself and get that out of it, but many of the commentaries seem to say that that is an implication, and I go along with that. Now, if you go to Isaiah 14:12-14, you will get a great deal more about this, and here is a part of the interesting and fascinating aspect of all this. The war that took place in heaven above, perhaps 4.5, 8.5, who knows how many billions of years ago, between a great, powerful, almighty Elohim, God family, God the Father, and the one who became Jesus Christ, who is called the Logos, or the Word, in John the first chapter, was a war, truly, like Star Wars of fiction and of special effects in the television and movies today. It resulted in the wreckage of the universe. When you look out into the universe, you see wreckage. You look into our immediate solar system, you see destruction. You see lifelessness, no matter how hard the scientists and atheists and others try to find cracks in rocks on Mars, or claim that we are Martians, or that there is sure life on Mars somewhere. They sent the little roller skate up there and prowled around and hit a rock, tipped over. They didn't find life. They haven't found life. It isn't there. But here is a lifeless, pulverized, inhospitable, ugly aspect of this planet. No oxygen. No creatures, no green living things at all. Look at the face of the moon. With a 10-power pair of binoculars on a clear night, you can look at huge pockmarks that are just like a face that had acne. And in some cases, the rims of those craters are over 100 miles across. Now, that means a gigantic meteor impacted our moon after the moon was formed, and it gradually, through an isostatic principle, because it may have magma in the interior as well, became round in shape. But you all know that every single day the Earth is, or do you, the Earth is bombarded by tens of thousands of little meteorites. And 99-point-some-odd percent of them burn up in the air when they enter the mantle of the Earth. You see them as a little streak going across the sky at night. Sometimes we go through belts where there's this space debris. And the debris came from somewhere. It came from other planets. Other bodies, and it has the same kinds of building materials that you find in the rocks of this earth. Meteorites have been found, and they can be iron and nickel, and they can have all kinds of metals that we have here on this earth. It's an incredible thing. I've actually seen rocks that were brought back from men from the moon, and I've seen them through a microscope, and it's amazing to me to see what looks to be like a glassy obsidian-like material with a perfectly shaped little crater with a little rigid rim around it, because even little grains of meteorites, so tiny they're like a grain of sand, can be moving at such incredible speeds that they can penetrate a rock. That has always been a factor that people worried about with men out in spacesuits taking spacewalks as to whether or not, and the chances are one out of who knows how many hundred million they get hit by one, but if they were, that'd be the end of them. Go through them just like a bullet. So, you know, if you have any smattering of information from a little bit of your recollection of high school or college, if you ever studied geology, historic and dynamic geology, or if you studied a little bit about the topography of the Earth, if you studied astronomy, then you know that the moons of these other planets, like ours, and some of them are actually shaped like a misshapen potato, are wreckage, destruction. Now, here is Jesus Christ of Nazareth in the New Testament saying, I saw Satan as lightning fall from heaven. And in Revelation, the 12th chapter, it describes a war between Satan the devil and his angels who try to overthrow God from his throne and are cast down to this earth. And it said his tail, it's a metaphorical description of a dragon, that his tail took with it a third of the stars, meaning angels, Revelation 1:10 proves that, and brought them down to the earth. Now, there's fascinating information about angelic spirits who are perverted, twisted, demonic spirits who do the devil's bidding, who are imprisoned in a place called Tartaru, which is the surface of this earth, a place of restraint, in bondage or chains until the judgment of that great day. Now, I try to cover as much of that as I possibly can in a couple of sermons at about, what, four times the amount of time I could on a television program. Let me take another quick time out, and you be sure to get that telephone number and get this fascinating material. They're both free of charge, no price whatsoever, and I'll be right back.
Stories and depictions of angels have fascinated people down through the ages. Everything from babies with wings to warrior angels battling evil. How much do you know about angels? Get your free cassette copies of All About Angels, Part 1 and Part 2 by Garner Ted Armstrong. They'll be sent free when you call 903-561-7070.
Now, what caused all the destruction? From a child, you learned that fossil fuels such as coal and oil and gas were deposited thousands of feet, sometimes deep beneath the surface of this earth, under sedimentary strata, and you know that that was a catastrophe on a scale that the human mind cannot really accept. It boggles the mind to think of 40 feet of flotsam being buried under muds that became shale, And you know the miners that got rescued and got to see President George Bush, and we were all so happy when they came out of that mine, are way down there, and they are mining the evidence of a pre-Adamic earth which was teeming with life. That's where our oil and our coal comes from. It was a massive destruction that caused that, and that's covered in these two tapes. Here is what God says about that event. Jesus said in Luke 10, 17 and 18, when the 70 returned with joy, saying, even the devils are subject unto us through thy name, he said unto them, quote, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Luke 10, 18, that's what the Savior, Jesus Christ, said. He was there. That's another reference to his pre-Adamic life and existence prior to creation with God the Father, which is covered in the first chapter of the book of John. Now in Ezekiel 28, 18, or 12 to 17, rather, thus says the Lord Eternal, you seal up the sum, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You have been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering. There are a lot of them are named, sardonyx, topaz, diamond, beryl, carbuncle, gold, etc. You are, it says in verse 14, the anointed cherub that covereth. Reference to him as being a cherub that was right next to the throne of God. I have set thee so. God was the authority. God was in power. God is the creator, and God put him there. You are upon the holy mountain of God, and that's this earth. It makes you wonder about that pre-Adamic world and where God the Father was at that time. You have walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. It must have been a fabulous creation at that time. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created till iniquity, and the word means lawlessness, was found in thee. Now here's an awkward expression. By the multitude of thy merchandise, they have filled the midst of thee with violence. The translators really missed it there. It means by the multitude of your trafficking, you became and they became filled with violence. He went about, and Bullinger's Companion Bible has an interesting note and appendix on that. He went about as a salesman, trafficking, presenting his ideas to his own angels, and eventually succeeded in perverting a third of the angels that are now called demons. Now, what is this about demons that are in a place called Tartaru, that means a place of restraint, reserved under chains of darkness until the last great day? And what is this thing about Christ witnessing to spirits in prison during the time of the flood? It's fascinating. You know, you need to know about angels. Who are they? How many of them are there? Archangels. Can they cohabit with women? Do you have your own personal angel? You need to find out all about angels. And you can by getting both of these tapes, All About Angels 1 and 2, 903-561-7070. That's 903-561-7070. And I'll see you right here in 1 week.
Stories and depictions of angels have fascinated people down through the ages. Everything from babies with wings to warrior angels battling evil. How much do you know about angels? Get your free cassette copies of All About Angels Part 1 and Part 2 by Garner Ted Armstrong. They'll be sent free when you call 903-561-7070.